I had my way, starting the regular season. Well, actually, we would have started the regular season about a week ago. Instead of dragging out this spring training nonsense as long as we have. As I've said all along, you know what I've said. You should get a t-shirt made up for it. Once spring training starts, nothing good happens until opening day. And if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, so far nothing good has happened this morning. Danny Jansen is out for a minimum of 2 weeks with a fractured pisiform, which is a little bone between your wrist and your hand. John Schneider, the manager of the Blue Jays, who joins us in a few minutes, by the way, telling reporters today that Danny Jansen is out, as I said, for 2 weeks minimum with the fracture. And that means that, of course, Alejandro Kirk's already made the team, but it means that the second catching spot will go to one of three non-roster invitees, Peyton Henry, Max McDowell, or the guy that I think probably ends up getting it is Brian Servin. Let's bring in Kevin Barker, co-host of this very show, who is in Florida. I mean, I hate to say it. You know how much we love Danny. We're Team Danny Jansen. He's our guy. We have him on a lot. I always talk to him. But, Kevin, if you had told me at the start of spring training there was a chance Danny Jansen would get hurt, I'd go, yeah. 2 weeks, and it's not, doesn't sound like it's anything serious. It is a hand injury, though. And he is a catcher. He's a catcher that needs power to hit home runs. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's his right hand, too.
As a right-handed hitter, explain the right hand to me.
Well, it's his top hand, but where he stands, he's a two-handed finish guy. It's a big deal. Like, he finishes his swing with two hands on the bat, which means it puts a lot of pressure on both hands, and especially rolling the hands, right? I was a release top hand guy, which basically my bottom hand was doing everything. It was just my top hand I was using to create tons of finish. Danny doesn't really want finish. He wants to barrel in and out because of how close he stands on the plate. It's a big deal. I know they said 2 weeks, but we got to read between the lines. It's going to be a little longer here. And I thought of two things. The first thing I thought of is they have so many smart people running this organization. Why in the heck don't they have, because of Danny's track record and where he stands on the plate and normally who he faces in spring training, which is some dudes that, quite frankly, don't have a ton of control, throw the ball all over the place, where he stands, small target. Why don't they have all of these things covered, Jeff? I just don't get it. With all of the smart people and everybody says that he's a big part of this team. I talked to the president a couple days ago. He was one of the names he mentioned, that he was a big deal to this team, hitting home runs and changing the game with the three-run variety. And to not have the entire park covered because of where you stand is just, I just don't get it. And then the Kirky thing, how does this change what he has to do spring training-wise? Because he's going to be asked to do a lot, at least early in the season, and I wonder about that part of it conditioning-wise and just getting the best offensively out of Alejandro Kirk. We understand what he does catching-wise, you know, the blocking and the trickery. It's the offensive side that they're asking a ton from. And early in the season, he's going to have to now play a lot, and especially behind the plate, I wonder how that's going to go. So that's two things that I was really thinking about.
If you're keeping track, I don't know why you would, but our friend Mark Balfour, our producer, did. If you're keeping track, in 2014, Danny Jansen suffered an ACL sprain and a meniscus tear in his left knee. In 2015, an opponent's backswing broke his left hand. In 2016, he had surgery on the hamate bone in his left hand. In 2021, he had a pair of hamstring strains interrupting what was becoming a breakout offensive season. In 2022, there was a left oblique strain, followed up by fracturing the fifth metacarpal in his left hand. And in 2023, there was a right middle finger fracture. So by my account, the left side of Danny Jansen's body is now leading 7-2, I think, in terms of injuries compared to the right side of his body. Not to make light of it, because, you know, as we've pointed out, we talked about this ad nauseum. The Jays are already likely going to be without at least one starting pitcher. They've got a tough start to the schedule. 10 games on the road. Those games are going to come fast and furious. Alejandro Kirk. You know, the Jays have said that Dalton Varsho, who is allegedly an emergency backup catcher, he's not going to catch, and I'm fine with that. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is another guy who has caught in the past. They don't want him to be the backup catcher, so we're going to go with one of these three non-roster invitees. And as I look at the schedule today, actually Alejandro Kirk is starting today for the Blue Jays against the Detroit Tigers. The game will be on Sportsnet at 1 o'clock. The lineup is Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Turner, Varsho in the fifth spot, Kirk, Kiermaier, Kiner-Falefa, Biggio, Ricky Tiedemann on the mound. Again, very much an opening day lineup. So, Kevin, I want to circle back a bit to Danny Jansen and the right hand. My initial instinct was, because he catches with his left hand, an injury to the left wrist would be more severe, would have a greater impact on his ability to play. But you pointing out the right wrist, that's where the power is generated a lot of the times. That's where the finish comes from, right?
Well, you got to think your bottom hand is your steering wheel. Your right hand is just along for the ride, unless you're a get it down and get it singing pull guy, which is what Danny wants to do. There's a lot of pressure on both of them. And again, he holds the bat with both hands with his finish, which means instead of pronating the top hand, means the hand stays sort of palm up and hand down. Now it rolls. And when it rolls, obviously it puts tons of pressure on everything that he's broken and, you know, everything that's taking place to the pull side that he wants to – how he wants to generate power and all those kind of things. I just don't understand. Like I everything that this dude means to your team offensively with what you're trying to do and why you don't have whatever it takes to put things on his hands.
I mean, it's possible this wouldn't protect. It's possible there's nothing you could protect that he could wear that you would protect.
It's not the elbow. It's the thing. It's a little part between the your wrist and your hand. And like, it's not like the pad would have to be 7 feet long.
Well, that's
like,
what I'm
just
saying.
Got to cover these parts and the check swinging and his hands a lot of the time are over the plate when he's swinging or taking a pitch because of where he's standing, because where he wants the ball to end up, because he feels like that makes him the better hitter is right. I've eliminated one part of the field. If I want to pull everything, I have to be standing in a certain place at the plate. That means when I go to swing, my hands a lot of the times will be swinging and over the middle part of the plate, which is bad news. Even when you take pitches, right? I take a pitch. What does my hand do? It shows it. That's what I said. Why are you not wearing
Well, I stuff? Guess my point.
Especially in spring training, I just don't get it.
Yeah, my point was I don't know if you could cover that bone. Because
sure
it's
I mean,
near,
they cover. They,
it's near.
Barry Bonds were everywhere. Because
yeah,
of where he stood.
But this is right, like on the wrist and hand. If you look at where it is, it's a tiny bone inside. I guess what are you going to do? Cover half his palm to protect it? That's the only thing. I mean, you know, we're arguing about that, but we're not arguing about. But I don't know. It just appears to be one of those things, one of those areas that would be hard to protect.
It'll be interesting too to see when he comes back. He has to make adjustments now. Like, is he going to? He can't stand there anymore. Like, sooner than later, it's happening. If you want to stay on the field and play games, because, again, he's fighting for a deal.
Yeah.
The only way you're going to do that is to play, and he has to adjust, move around on the dish. And if he moves around, will he still be the Danny that they want him to be? It's intriguing. Maybe we'll ask John. Maybe John will have the answer.
Yeah, John Schneider will join us in a few minutes. We will go to the back leg line as well. And Caleb Joseph, Sportsnet Blue Jays analyst, will join us in the bottom of the hour, too. We'll get Caleb's take. He was a catcher. We'll get Caleb's take on this injury and also some of his thoughts about spring training. Kevin, Ricky Tiedemann goes today for the Blue Jays. What is the rest of spring training about for Ricky Tiedemann?
Health. I mean, find a routine that will keep you pitching every 5 days. That's for what it is for me. I mean, he has electric stuff. Nobody can argue. It's comes out hot. It stays hot. It keeps the zone. He's got a decent enough secondary stuff. Like, he can be unpredictable. He can throw a fastball to a fastball hitter in a fastball count, which is a good thing, especially when you're left-handed. You don't have to locate all the time, right? You don't have to be perfect with those things because of how hard he throws, how heavy it is. For me, it's health. Figure the routine out. Stay healthy. You do that, you'll be in the big league sooner than later. You don't, sooner than later, they will have to forget about you, and nobody wants that.
All right. We mentioned the news this morning in Blue Jays camp. Danny Jansen has a fractured bone near his right wrist. He is out for 1 to 2 weeks. 22 manager John Schneider, the man himself, joins us. Hello, Skipper. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good to talk with you.
I mean, it's great to talk to you. I wish we weren't leading off with a discussion of a Danny Jansen injury, but there you are. Look, you're a former catcher. What is his rehab going to look like?
I think we'll know more. Later today or tomorrow. He's got to follow up with a doctor here. And I mean, looking at it right now, I think we kind of dodged a bullet a little bit. But a lot of it is going to depend on what the doctor says today. And then kind of how Jano's feeling basically day to day, week to week. So hopefully we can get him, you know, cranking back up pretty soon. And but we'll have more info probably later today or tomorrow.
John, where he stands at the plate, when he comes back, any adjustments he'll have to make? Hands are catching a lot of the plate when he goes to swing, even when he takes pitches. Right, he's showing you the hands, and that's a bad thing, right? A lot of pitchers or throwers are not pitchers. Any adjustments you think you'll have to make when he comes back?
Well, for one, yeah, I think he's going to have to wear a pad on that hand. He's got one on his left hand. It seems like he's a magnet for pitches, whether he's at the plate or behind the plate. But yeah, I think a lot of it is his swing, kind of. You know, his hands are coming through the zone in a way where he is a little bit susceptible to that pitch in. You know, people are pitching him in. Pretty regularly. So I think the first thing is just get a little bit of a protective something on that right hand. He's weird, you know, he doesn't wear batting gloves. He's kind of old school. So I think just finding something that's going to work for him, that's going to be comfortable. But it's unfortunately, it seems to be kind of part of his MO when he is at the plate. And, you know, hopefully we can avoid it without taking away of what he does really well.
Okay, John, obviously this is, for me anyway, going to put a lot of pressure on Kirky to play a lot, especially at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to adjust anything he's doing here the last couple of weeks of spring training. So he is raring and ready to go. Now, you got some days off there early in the season. I think you can maneuver around that and give him a breaker or two. But anything you have to do when it comes to Kirky?
Not really. You know, we're fortunate when we have those two guys healthy, kind of 1A and 1B, you know, between Jano and Kirky. So it'll be pretty similar to, you know, a normal ramp up for him, making sure that he's catching back-to-back games in camp. So he is ready to roll for the season. The off days are pretty good for us early on. And I think just looking at, you know, Kirky, he probably looks the same physically. He's in such a better spot, though, strength-wise, much more close to where he was in 2022 at this point. So he's put himself in a spot to be able to kind of, you know, get out of the gates and go. But I think the ramp up is going to be very similar to what we had planned, even before we got this news on Jano.
John, clearly somebody goes down and gets hurt, the door is open for somebody else. I know you've got, I believe, Peyton Henry, Max McDowell, and Brian Servin are the three non-roster guys in camp. One of those would likely be, I don't want to put words in your mouth, I've got to assume one of those guys would break with the team if Jano's not there.
Yeah, I think at this point, again, kind of waiting and seeing, you know, exactly how Jano responds to the next few days or next week. But, yeah, I mean, I know Varsh is caught, and he's kind of our emergency third catcher. But we don't want to disrupt what he's doing right now in the outfield, what he's doing at the plate. Made some big strides at the plate. So you want to keep him comfortable for sure. And, yeah, if it gets to the point, I think, you know, you got those three guys who are all doing really well, you know, especially, you know, Servin and Henry are doing really well and have kind of acclimated well to our pitching staff and what we do. And they're having good at-bats, too. So, yeah, I think those guys will kind of get a little bit more runway the last 2 weeks of camp and, you know, build them up not only physically, but I think getting them a little bit more involved in the day-to-day with Pete and the pitching staff as well.
John, is that hard? I know you got a veteran staff, right? It shouldn't be too hard for a catcher to go back there and I don't want to say fill in the blanks, but, you know, not miss a beat, so to speak, right? Put the fingers down, set up in the right spot. Any worry about that? Again, it's you have a veteran rotation, I think, who knows their game plan and knows how to execute it. Is there a worry of that? Again, you have PD2, which is a big deal. That will help. Right. But how do you quicken that along so when one of those three guys are in the game, you don't miss a beat?
Yeah, I think they're all in a good spot. You know, Pete's been doing this forever, and he's really good. You know, after every game here the next morning, all the pitchers that threw in games and all of the catchers that are in camp, they're going over their outings. They're going over what they like to do, what they don't like to do. So I think having every one of the catchers in that meeting has been big. And then you got to see, I mean, yesterday's a perfect example of, you know, Servin kind of executing a game plan with Bowden against a basically an A lineup in Minnesota and seeing how just how quick he can make adjustments, you know, or stick to the game plan if it is working. So I don't think there's much that goes into it. Like you said, the pitchers know what they're trying to do. They are a veteran group, and the catchers they're all on board. You know, at that position, you have to really cover your bases, you know what I mean, in case something like this does happen, to where you're not playing catch up in terms of, you know, the relationship with the staff. So Pete's done a great job with that, and the catchers have been, you know, they've been great all camp. So I think there's going to be more opportunities to, you know, evaluate what they're doing with certain guys, you know, as camp winds down. But to me, it's not a worry. You know, these guys have both played in the big leagues, you know, in Peyton and Serve. So, you know, feel fortunate that we have those guys here.
John, when do you have to make a decision on whether or not Kevin Gausman breaks with the team?
Well, we'll see. I mean, today he's throwing a live BP here in about 15 minutes. And then from there, you know, if all goes well, which we're expecting it to, get him into a game and see just where he ends up in terms of pitch count. You know, so I think that's still a little bit away. We'll know more after he gets into a game. And, you know, we always say, you know, if you got any kind of pitch count of Kevin Gausman, you want to take advantage of it. So it may be you want to try to get him built up to around 75 pitches, you know what I mean? But we're going to work hand-in-hand with Kev and kind of see how he's feeling. And if we can expedite that, great. And if we can't, then that's okay too. So we want to make sure we're doing what's right by him. But we'll know a lot more after he gets into a game.
John, how do you know when to take the next step with Manoa?
Again, just kind of seeing how he's been feeling much better just in throwing, and hopefully he gets off the mound here either tomorrow or Sunday and go from there. It's, you know, it's tough because of the timing aspect of it, to where, you know, you want to build him up and you want to make sure that he's, you know, built up to a starter's workload. And time is the really thing that's, you know, kind of going against him. He's obviously, you know, he came in, you know, competing and, you know, having a little bit of a setback. It sucks for him. It sucks for us. But it's we'll know more, you know, how he bounces back from his side, how he bounces back when he does get into games or even just facing hitters. And, you know, see where we are in the calendar. But as long as he's progressing in the right way, you know, that's what we're looking for right now.
John, what are your eyes and what are the analytics telling you about where Joey Votto is now?
I mean, obviously career speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for him, I've been more, you know, intrigued with the conversations. I mean, he's been brutally honest about where he is physically and how he feels compared to years past, which is great. Just watching him move around, watching him take live at bats, getting the feedback from, you know, how hard he's hitting the ball and things like that. It's been really positive. It's been really positive, almost ahead of schedule a little bit. So excited to see him. He'll be in the game Sunday. We got a split squad. He'll probably be in at the Phillies on Sunday. And, you know, you don't want to rush it. You don't want to, you know, he's 40 years old, obviously, so you want to make sure that he's good. And I think his mindset is he wants to make sure that he's good. He's not really in a rush and knows what he needs to do to get ready for a season and just proving to himself that he can still do this at a high level. So I think, you know, it's just being constant communication with him. Hey, how you feeling, you know, in terms of what you usually feel like in a normal, healthy spring training. And you trust that, you know, he knows when he feels good and when he doesn't. So it's but all the signs so far, I mean, he's in here. He's doing a lot of stuff. If he's not hitting, he's, you know, taking ground balls. He's shagging out in left field. He's in the cage. He's trying to really speed up that process of getting his feet underneath him. And I think with a guy like him, man, you kind of know when it's right.
When you're looking at sort of the tail end of the roster, you know, I'm thinking of guys like Vogelbach, Clement, Horwitz, Davis Schneider, like the guys that are kind of battling for the final few spots. I'll put Votto in there as well. John, how much of it is performance-based, or how much of it is simply needs-based? And, you know, what I mean about that is you want somebody who can turn in a fastball late in the game. You want somebody who's going to make contact. You want somebody who's not going to hurt you in the bases. You want somebody who's going to be able to play defense in multiple positions. Where's the balance between need and performance when it comes to making that decision?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think we know, you know, pretty much how, you know, we know how we're built. We know what the needs are going to be from those certain spots that are not going to be in there every day or coming off the bench. So, you know, I think you don't want to pigeonhole guys, but, you know what you're kind of dealing with in terms of your everyday lineup. And then from there, you know, yeah, performance is part of it. And they're all doing really well between, you know, Ernie, Bogey, Schneid, you know, SB, all those guys, they're doing really well. So it performance counts. But at the end of the day, you know, if you get out of here healthy and everyone's doing their part, you try to really focus in on, okay, how are we expecting to roll out our guys, our normal lineup for the most part. And then how are we going to complement that when you do get into some matchups that may be tough for some guys, or if you're going to hit Vogie for somebody, you know, who are you going to run, you know, who's going to go in and play defense, things like that. That's more kind of how we're trying to, you know, fit the pieces of the puzzle together.
John, when you're having guys that are experienced, like the names that you just mentioned, what's your role in all that?
I mean, I think just being brutally honest with them and upfront with them. You know, a lot of these guys came in, you know, they know they're competing. And, you know, it's easy for a player to put extra pressure on himself or try to do too much. It's you got to be open. You got to be honest. You got to tell them, you know, the good things just as much as the bad things. And, you know, you're looking for certain things, certain attributes that you may lean on more throughout the course of the year. And you're seeing how they respond to certain situations. So, you know, I think just watching them play for one, but then having conversations with them pretty regularly about, you know, not only where they stand, but what we're thinking about, how we're going to use them.
John, sorry, Jeff, one more. I was just wondering about George Springer. George Springer, to me, looks like he can actually, when he wants to, pull a baseball. Is that what you're seeing? And if you are seeing that, why do you think he's capable of doing that, at least early on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Georgie, you know, he's been playing long enough. He understands what makes him great. And, you know, just looking at last year, you know, he's one of the guys that I think everyone focuses on from our offense, rightfully so. And, you know, the whole thing with, you know, less shifting, you know, he got shifted way less. And I think that plays a part of your mental approach, thinking there's more hits on the other side of the field or up the middle. And it's kind of not the case, you know what I mean? So I think George realizing that and understanding that we want him and the guys at the top of the order to do damage. You know, it's not, hey, we're going to get four hits and try to score. You know, we kind of saw how that script played out. We want these guys to be dangerous and to get the ball in the air and do some damage. So him understanding that and just, I think, getting back to, you know, what has made him great over his career, that's where he's at. And he knows there's going to be times where, okay, I got to get a guy over, or there's going to be times where, okay, I need to try to drive the ball in the gap or over the fence here. And sticking with that, results out of the window, you know, take the results out of it, but just understanding that he's really good when he's pulling the ball. And again, we're not talking, you know, just snap hooking the ball down the line. We're talking about pulling the ball in the air with authority. And I've been really pleased with him from a physical standpoint and how his at bats look, and just what he's trying to do with every single at bat.
John, listen, it was great of you to do this today. Thanks so much, man. Look forward to doing this during the regular season. And, hopefully we can get through spring training without any further drama.
Yeah, good luck,
buddy.
Here we
go. I'll knock on wood right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. We're at that point where you're crossing your fingers every day, it seems like. But so far, so good. And it was great catching up with you guys. I'm looking forward to talking to you soon.
Yeah, that's why they invented bubble wrap, John. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays. So there you go. Interesting interesting take on Danny Jansen and the suggestion that perhaps the suggestion, Kevin, that reading into what John said, they're going to wait and see what they hear from Danny in the next couple of days and maybe have to pivot off that. In other words, right now, if it's short term, they got an answer. If it's longer term,
I'd be shocked if it's just 2 weeks. I mean, it's your hand. You break something in your hand. I mean, realistically, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but, you know, when you break something, 2 weeks like that. And I just think it's funny that I mentioned the guard on his hand, and the very first thing he said out of his mouth was, it'd be nice if he wore something on his hand to protect his hands. It's just, it's not rocket science. I don't want to be hard on him and be hard on the organization, but come on. Like, it's just sometimes you bring things on yourself. And for me, that's one of them. I mean, it's Captain Obvious. You're standing where you're standing. You're probably going to be pitched a certain way that other guys in your lineup are not going to be pitched. Let's guard things to keep you on the field. And sometimes you got to learn the hard way. And I think that's one of these things where probably they're thinking to themselves, well, it would have just been easier if we would have got him in an equipment room and said, here, put this on your wrist. But it didn't happen, and hopefully other guys can pick it up. Hopefully Kirky can stay on the field long enough, at least till Danny gets back, that they don't miss a beat and they can get off to a hot start.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's some injuries as a catcher you can't compensate for, but it's those other ones, the other ones that you could prevent, that you would you would think it would make sense. 416-413-3959 is the back leg line. Want to get to a couple of callers, and then Caleb Joseph is going to join us. Andrew in Stratford.
Boys, I got a question for you, and I'm going to frame it like this. If I'm setting the number of major league starts that Alek Manoah ever makes again in a Blue Jays uniform at 0.5, are you taking the over or the under? And if you're taking the over, are you sure about that? And do you know people around this team who would take the under? I guess what I'm getting at is, for a couple weeks, I've been wondering what's going on with this guy. I don't know. Our guy might be cooked. Anyway, wondering what you think about it.
Yeah, I'll turn that over to you, Barker. I'll probably take the over.
Your fingers crossed, if you're a Blue Jays fan, you better take the over. I mean, I don't know if you've been noticing, but the quality of depth at the minor league level when it comes to the rotation ain't great. I mean, after Ricky Tatum and who? You don't want to see a ton of Mitch White. I mean, you'd have to go outside the organization. Look, again, it gets back to, he showed up last year the way he wasn't supposed to show up. This year, he showed up the way he's supposed to show up. Just so happens that maybe he was overthrowing. Maybe mechanically, he just needs to tweak some things to be a little bit better when it comes to everything that it takes to be Alek Manoah. But I'm taking the over. I'm taking the way over.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I'm with you, too. I'm not saying that Alek Manoah is going to ever be a finalist for a Cy Young Award again. But, you know, everything we're kind of hearing, reading in the lines, the Jays aren't going to punt on this guy. Let's put it that way. He's going to be given every chance. If they were going to punt on him, they would have punted last year. He's going to be given every chance to reestablish himself with this team. And if nothing else, even to build up his trade value. Because, you know, we talked about this. Gossman's thrown a lot of pitches, a lot of innings. Bassett's not young. Like, at some point, you're going to need another guy to step up here and give you close to 200 innings.
And the outing that he did throw in, I mean, I know he hit a couple of guys. His stuff was still good, right?
Yes.
The velocity was there. The tunneling and the late break on the slider was there. He had a couple of different sliders. I think they like all those things because they feel like conditioning-wise, he has enough body awareness now that he can self-correct and consistently be that person. Now it's just taking that next step and staying on the field and pitching every 5 days. And fingers crossed, if you're a Jays fan, he does that.
Squeezing one more call, Mike in Toronto.
Kevin, I wanted to say how much, as a listener, I appreciate your candor about your minor league career and your struggles to stay in the big leagues. It's very informative. And I wondered if you, I've never heard you talk about it. I wonder if you ever in your head play the game of sliding doors, where you wonder if one or two things might have gone differently, would your career have gone a lot differently? Do you ever feel like you didn't get a fair shake, and that maybe if you had, you could have had more of a major league career than you ended up having? I'd appreciate your honesty about this, and thanks again for the show, guys.
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, I take full credit for my career. I mean, I like to think that I did everything possible to be a big leaguer, and for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. Now, do I think if I'd had a better hitting coach or a better manager when I first broke into the big leagues, that would have had enough trust in me to work through things, and you know, the adjustments that I was trying to make could have been a little smaller and just been better at saying no. I tell Jeff this all the time. You know, sometimes it's hard for a minor leaguer on the fringe or a very young player to say no to a Hall of Famer or to a manager or to an organization because it's just not working for you. And the longer you try it, the more you stink at your job. And when you stink, sooner or later, it's not going to work out for you and you're going to have to go down. And once you go down a few times, sooner or later, just going to give up on you. And that's what happened to me. But I'm not an excuse guy. I mean, I take full blame for my career, whatever that's worth. You know, I did the best I could. I worked my tail off. I can honestly say this. Every time I turn my baseball card over, I know how it got there.
Very well said, Mr. Barker. I'm going to let you scoot. Enjoy the rest of the day. Enjoy the weekend. And, well, we'll be talking on the weekend, but we'll get back together on Monday. Thanks, man. Be well.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Take care. Kevin Barker, co-host of Blair and Barker. In Florida. One more week with Mr. Barker in the lovely climes of Florida. 1 o'clock is the first pitch today. Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, Kiner, Falefa, Biggio, Ricky Tiedemann on the mound. 1 o'clock on Sportsnet. Caleb Joseph, Sportsnet Blue Jays analyst, former catcher, will join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Clock on Sportsnet, the Jays and the Detroit Tigers continue Grapefruit League action. George Springer, Bo Bichette, Vladdy Jr., Justin Turner, Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk, Kevin Kiermaier, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Evan Biggio, Ricky Tiedemann on the mound for the Blue Jays. Again, very much an opening day lineup, an opening day flavor to that particular game. And the news out of Blue Jays camp this morning, Danny Jansen is out for at least 1 to 2 weeks. Kind of on board with Kevin Barker. I think that's unusually optimistic, but is out for a couple of weeks at least with a fractured bone near his right wrist. The Jays are awaiting further medical information on it. John Schneider just joined us and said that they'll have a clearer idea as to how they're going to proceed with rehabilitation today or tomorrow. But that does initially at least open a spot for one of three non-roster invitees to make the team. And you'd have to think, based on what we've seen so far, that Brian Servin, who the Jays acquired, he was in the Colorado Rockies organization and the Cubs organization as well. The Jays acquired him. You'd have to think that he would probably be the front runner for that job. John Schneider also saying that even though Dalton Varsho is considered the emergency catcher, the Jays at this point in time are more interested in letting him continue his development as an outfielder. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has also caught in the past, but there's, as far as we can tell right now, he's going to be the everyday third baseman. So my understanding here is the Jays will wait until see how this plays out, and if it's something more serious than 2 weeks, they may have to make a move. But that's where we are right now in terms of good news. Joey Votto will play his first game as a Blue Jay on Sunday in Clearwater against the Phillies, part of a split squad game. And, and Kevin Gausman is throwing live BP today. According to John Schneider, we'll get a read on where he is after that. The goal remains to get Kevin Gausman built up to 75 pitches to get him ready for the regular season. And Alek Manoah seems to be trending in the right direction, albeit slower than I think most of us, certainly Alek Manoah and the Blue Jays, would like to see nonetheless. It does seem to be trending in the right direction. So far, he has not had any setbacks, but let's just say it. He's not going to be breaking camp with the team. That's just not happening. So that's where we are going into the weekend with the regular season just peeking at us around the corner now, less than 2 weeks away before the Jays open the regular season against the Tampa Bay Rays. Caleb Joseph is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. He is also, of course, a former catcher. Caleb, thank you for joining us, or rather me, today on Blair and Barker. I'm sure you've seen my co-conspirator down in Dunedin. Perfect guy to have on here. Former catcher.
Yeah.
Danny Jansen has that wrist injury. Mr. Barker's already kind of broken down, bad pun, but he's kind of broken down the impact it would have in his swing, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me what, I mean, Danny Jansen's a catcher. It's his hand / wrist. It's never good for a catcher to have a hand or a wrist injury, is it?
No, it's not. And that just seems to be the target. All of these injuries, it seems like every time he's injured, it's somewhere in the hand. Last year he had the foul ball that ricocheted off, and it hit his throwing hand. And this is another one in the throwing hand. And there's so many little bones in the hand that are just susceptible. And it's miraculous, really, when you do get hit in the hand that you don't break a bone. And I can't tell you how many times we've seen a baseball game and guys get hit in the hand. They go down to first. You see the trainer looking at it. He squeezes the other trainer's hand to make sure the strength is good, and they move on, and there's nothing to it. And it seems like every single time a round object at about 95 hits Danny Jansen in the hand, it breaks something. And I just feel for him. I really feel for him. This is a guy that they're really heavily leaning on. He debuted in 2018. The very next year, he made 94 starts in 19 at catcher. That's when everybody thinks, wow, we've got a frontline guy. But since then, Jeff, he's only made between 40 and 65 starts.
Yeah.
Catcher, because he consistently finds himself on the IL. And they need his game calling. His game calling has really come around. I really felt like last year he took a huge step in the right direction in terms of just slowing it down, making the proper mound visit, calling the right pitches at the right time and the right situation in the game. And I really feel like they're going to miss that experience behind the plate. And we'll just have to see who can step up, because it's kind of like the Rays motto, next guy up. They're going to have to do it themselves, and the Jays are going to have to do it at catcher.
Now, obviously, it puts the focus even more on Alejandro Kirk, given, you know, Kirky seems to be, everybody seems to be happy with where Kirky is right now. But I think they always put that in the context of being happy where Kirky is, because, you know, you have Jano there as well. And that kind of makes makes everything fits together nicely, I guess. Will there need to be a change in routine for Alejandro here right out of the gate?
Yeah, great question. I think that's everybody's fear, is can Kirk handle 110, 115 games at the catcher position and still with the bat lineup needs him to do. Remember, he's playing about every other day in spring training. The body still feels fresh. You're not traveling. There's a ton of wear and tear on it outside of just one or two bullpens. Once games start going, the relatively short days when you're not playing. I was over at the complex a couple of days ago and he wasn't starting. He took some batting practice, caught bullpen, and then his day was over. Well, that's not going to be the case throughout a major league season. You're in there for 9 innings, 3-something hours long, you're 4 ABs, and then you wake up and you do it all over again the next day. It's just a matter of, can he recover? And being that it's the earlier part of the season, I think he's got a really nice chance. If this was July or August, right, kind of in the middle of summer, and now he's 40, 50 games into it and then has to really change his routine and how they've kind of been going about it, I think you're in a bit of a, not trouble, but you're in a bit of a mess where you have to kind of change the flow of the season. Adding games is always harder versus reducing games. But when you're going into a season, his body's nice and fresh. I do think when you talk about timing, it's probably better to happen right now than later in the season.
Caleb, what have you seen this spring that has really impressed you? And what have you not seen that concerns you? Or maybe what have you seen that concerns you?
Well, I like the numbers that Varsho is putting up. I really like that. Spring is such a weird part of the season. When you look at a guy like Dalton Varsho that everybody kind of expects a little bit more, I don't think they're expecting him to be Bryce Harper or anything, but I think they want a little bit more for this lineup to kind of do what they want to do. And when a guy like Varsho comes into spring and puts up, you know, pretty good numbers and seems like he's making a few mechanical adjustments and he's getting some results, that's what really can fire up a fan base. On the opposite end of the spectrum, when you have a guy like George Springer, who is a very well-paid player on this team, who people expect more, and he's putting out a 740 OPS, and he comes into spring, and he's at the very bottom of the entire Blue Jays roster in exit velocity, it is a bit of a scare. So you're going, oh my goodness, are we going to have another not so good season from Springer? So it works kind of opposites. If Springer had a great year the year before and he came in, he's a little bit slow starting, people give him the benefit of the doubt and mm-hmm. say, he's all right. It's just spring training. He's a veteran guy, but coming off of a tough season, you really want to have a good spring so that you kind of reinvigorate the fan base. You reinvigorate yourself. You have a little bit of confidence. You feel like those adjustments and hard work in the spring is going to pay off, and you feel confident going into the season. I really like what I've seen from Varsho, and I am a little bit, I'm not going to say concerned, but I think Springer is the guy that's going to, is the main point in this lineup. Like, they have got to get something close to an 820, 830 OPS for what they're paying to really have that lineup really, really run the way I think they want it to.
This whole notion that he wants to pull the ball more, or that, I don't know, it's more they want him to pull it more, he wants to pull it more. How do you look at that? Because George Springer's an older guy, and George Springer, I think at this point, George Springer is what he is. Now, I don't know, maybe he's not reinventing himself. Maybe this is what he used to do when he was with Houston. I don't know, but it does kind of puzzle me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that when I played against him not too long ago, he was gap to gap. He could go to right center with massive authority. And I have no idea why, but it seems like over the last year or two that kind of right center power has kind of diminished. I do love the fact that with two strikes or with a guy on second base in a run-producing situation, he can take a fastball to right field on a line to get a base hit. But when it comes to power, which is probably going to be his greatest asset, trying to get to that 820, 830 OPS, I think it's pull side heavy right now. And some of that's mechanics, some of that's looking in a certain spot, some of that's cheating. And I think George is a very educated guesser up there. And I really feel like he's got a one pitch in one spot. I knew back when I played, there are certain guys that they're going to make their mind up that they're going to swing and try and hit it in one direction no matter what it is. I think George is one of those types of hitters that he might auto take pitch one and then auto swing on pitch two. Doesn't matter what it is, where it is, he's letting it go in a certain game plan. And if you sell out to the pull side, you can get up on the plate, which he likes to do. He's closer to the plate now than he was when I played against him, just a little bit, maybe an inch or two, but it sure visually looks like he's trying to get on it and pull it. And I think they're trying to get him into a little larger category with the slug. And in the last year or two, the slug has been to the pull side. So it's obvious that they want him to slug a little bit more. Maybe it's pull side. I just think he's got to be on time and ready for whatever pitch that he's going to look for, which if you're looking pull side, they're going to try and jam you in. And you better be ready to get that bat head out in front to hit that fastball to the pull side.
What will you be looking for Sunday from Joey Votto to suggest that he is close to being able to help this team?
Yeah, great question. He looks great. He's in great physical shape. He's a large human, and remember playing against him years ago. And what I remember about him playing against him was just his incredible eye and ability to work in AB. And I remember reading something about him where he said he wasn't a threat and he really was going to try and slug a little bit more versus the high on base. Well, he's not going to be an everyday player for the Toronto Blue Jays. And what they're going to need him to do is come in and have a really, really good at-bat with a guy in scoring position to drive in a big run, or they're going to want him to try and slug the ball out of the ballpark. And so what I'm going to be looking for is a little bit of thump. I'm going to look for him to kind of do a little bit more damage. He was always a guy that could take an up and in fastball and kind of carve it in the left field for a single. But I think now what they're looking for is we'd like for you to try and hit it over the fence or get a big hit with a guy in scoring position. Watched him take BP yesterday. The swing is smooth. It's fluid. His lower half still works very, very well. He looks good. He looks like he can contribute, but I think it's going to look a little bit different than what people might be accustomed to in Cincinnati. Of course, he could hit the ball out, but he was always kind of an average high OBP first guy. I think he might be a different guy in a Jays lineup. So if he can thump the ball, hit some balls off or over the wall, he might be able to help the Jays.
Not so long ago, you were in that clubhouse as a player. How is this group different from, you know, the group that you remember?
Older. There's so many pieces that are similar. The Romano, Bichette, Guerrero, a lot of the mainstays have stayed. And you can just feel they're getting older. I've had a couple nice conversations with Bo, even talking with Vladdy. They know. They just know that it just hasn't been good enough. And there was a time in 20 where making the playoffs, wow, that was great. Like, we really accomplished something. And that's not the case anymore. And it's going to take, talk to Bo Bichette, it's going to take everybody in the entire organization pulling on the same direction. And that's buy-in, that's culture. And I know Barker, if he was listening right now, he'd be rolling his eyes, pounding his fist. That don't matter.
That don't matter, culture.
That's hockey. I don't buy that, you know. But what it is you got to have buy-in. I mean, it really does. I really think it matters. And if you got guys really, really pulling in the same direction and no distractions and everybody has the same common goal, I really think you can see something special. And I really think DeMarlo Hale is going to be a huge addition to this club. I really feel like he brings some accountability that there are times when, you know, sometimes a veteran guy can step in, maybe a Votto or even a Justin Turner can step in and keep everybody pulling in the same direction. And there are times when a coach needs to pull a guy aside and be able to tell him the honest truth. And DeMarlo Hale, he will tell you the truth. And that's what you want. You want truth tellers, even if it hurts your feelings. And I think that might be one of the biggest changes for the Blue Jays this year is no matter who it is, no matter how much money you got in the bank, some truth might be spoken this year. And I think that's kind of what they need. So I'm hopeful. They've got to really do everything right to get where they want to be. But so does every other team. So if they can stay healthy, if they can reach their potential on the back of the baseball card, if everybody on that team plays to the best year of the back of their baseball card, they're going to be okay. Is that a lot to ask? Absolutely. But that's what it takes to win a world championship.
Caleb, good of you to join us, my friend. As always, look forward to it this year. Thank you.
Yep, you got it. See you, Jeff.
Caleb Joseph, Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. And again, 1 o'clock today, first pitch. The Jays and the Detroit Tigers, and then tomorrow is the breakout game, the spring breakout game with prospects. It's around 4 o'clock. It's going to start. Don't know if you had a chance to watch it last night. I watched the Pittsburgh-Baltimore breakout, Paul Skeens against Jackson Holliday. That one at bat alone was worth paying attention to. So I think Major League Baseball's got a winner with that. Hopefully they can figure out how to market it and maybe make it a more regular feature of spring training, maybe expand it. You know, gosh knows there's enough facilities in Florida that you could probably manage to pull it off and maybe turn it into a viable television product as well. So that is it for us. Again, Blue Jays baseball today on Sportsnet. 1 o'clock, your chance to see Ricky Tiedemann take another step towards not securing a spot on the roster, but taking another step towards putting himself in a position where he would certainly be on the radar should the Jays need to make a move with one of their starting pitchers at some point. The news on Danny Jansen. Danny Jansen out 1 to 2 weeks with a fractured bone in his right hand. So that's it for us. We'll be back on Monday. Enjoy the baseball. Have a great weekend.